Wake up, Coastal Carolina. Wake up. This is your CCTA Wake Up Call.
Produced by the Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association, a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization dedicated to the preservation of the U.S. Constitution, free enterprise, and individual liberty.
Hello, Coastal Carolina, and welcome to CCTA Wake Up Call. I'm your host, Rick Hopkins. Good to be with you again today. Our panel today, we have Bob and Mary Griswold. Mary is author of a conservative blog called RightWingGranny.com. And good to have you guys with us today. We have Hal and Rainer James. Rainer is chairman of our Legislative Action Committee. And Hal is chairman of our Watchdog Committee.
Good evening.
We have Glenn Fink, our most recent past chairman of CCTA, is with us today. And we have some guests. Well, we've got a new regular, actually. Diane Ruffino has been with us for the last couple of shows, and she's agreed to become a regular participant. Diane's with the ENC Tea Party out of Pitt County, and she writes a conservative blog called For Love in God and Country. And we enjoy having you with us again, Diane.
Thanks, Rick.
Diane brought with her Karen Kozell, founder of the ENC Tea Party out of Pitt County. And she tells me she's a homeschool mom of 13.
That's right.
And still sane. We have another guest with us, Jerry Shield. Jerry, you might have heard the name associated with fishing, but that's not why he's here today. Jerry's also chairman of the God and Country Christian Alliance, formerly the Christian Coalition here in the Craven County area. So welcome. Good to have you guys with us today. The topic today that we're going to start off with is one that has recently reared its head again. It's in the past been unsuccessful, but this time we're hoping for some success, and that's the repeal of the Johnson Amendment. And President Trump has vowed that he's going to do that. And Jerry, what would that do for the churches?
Well, quite a few years ago, I talked to my pastor about distributing voter guides on behalf of the Craven Pamlico Christian Coalition. They were nonpartisan voter guides. They didn't have positions on who to vote for. They just had issues and where the candidates stood on the issues. It allowed the voters to look at these and decide, well, if you're pro-life, this candidate is the one you want to vote for. If you're not pro-life, then perhaps the other candidate. In other words, they were, even the photographs were nonpartisan. They weren't, they were favorable photographs of all the candidates. We tried to be as fair and balanced as we could. And I had distributed those on the windshields of cars while church services were going on over the years. But this was a relatively new pastor, so some people just go and put them on the windshields. I like to get permission to do that. So I was told that he wouldn't allow it. I told him why I thought they should be allowed, and he cited not the Johnson Amendment in word, but in theory he had a problem with he might lose tax-exempt status.
Right. Well, let me interrupt real quick because I neglected to, for our listeners out there that may not know what the Johnson Amendment is, to explain. The Johnson Amendment refers to a change in the U.S. tax code that was made in 1954, which prohibited certain tax-exempt organizations from endorsing and opposing political candidates. Now, why would we be for it? Well, I'll give you one good reason, because if you Google the Johnson Amendment, every left-wing newspaper or here's NPR, MSNBC, why Trump won't destroy the Johnson Amendment. Let's see. Repealing the Johnson Amendment may be unwise. That's from the Washington Times.
And that one actually tends to be more conservative than the other Washington rags.
Right. But most everything on here is talking about why it would be a bad thing for him to do that. So if they again it, I'm for it. Mary.
I did some research on this, and I came across an NPR article, not the most unbiased source, but I got some very interesting information. A 2016 study by Pew Research Center was talking about, do churches talk about political issues? And they found out that 28% of Black Protestants heard their clergy speak in support of Hillary Clinton during the 2016 campaign, while about 1 in 5 Black Protestants, about 20%, said they had heard their ministers denounce Donald Trump. By comparison, 4% of white evangelicals had heard their clergy speak in favor of a presidential candidate, 2% each for Trump and Clinton, while 7% heard their clergy speak against a candidate, mostly Clinton.
Hmm. Wow. Well, I think it's a perfect illustration of why the government doesn't need to be involved, because over the years, so many pastors aren't clear on what the Johnson Amendment is. They think it prohibits any political discussion whatsoever, and it does not.
Yeah. And some of the problems are the misconceptions of the pastors themselves. A lot of these seminaries are teaching about the Johnson Amendment just as an FYI to their students, and it is a fear factor when the pastors graduate and they are teaching at a church. They're concerned about what they say, that will it be something that will hurt their church in this tax exemption. There has been absolutely no punishments from the IRS from this bill. And this amendment has been around for 60 years.
Right.
And there's been none. There has been one person that was taken to the federal courts, and that was Randall Terry. And if you remember him, he was a really strong anti-abortion leader, and had several abortion clinics closed, and it was very effective. But he also went to New York and had a church in his area in New York take out a page in the newspaper, and it said, "Do not vote for Bill Clinton." This is essentially because he is pro-abortion. And he was taken, and he was, they tried to basically threaten him, but nothing happened. Nothing happened. They agreed not to do it again.
Karen, short of preaching overthrow of the government doesn't belong in the pulpit, and it doesn't belong pulling the strings of the person who is. That's just wrong.
That's right. Well, there's a separation of church and state, and that has been misunderstood. We don't want the state in the church.
Exactly.
The
government shall not establish
exactly
a church.
That's exactly right.
It doesn't say anything in the Constitution about what churches can do.
That's right.
Hal?
I looked it up and I did a Google search on it, and actually went to Wikipedia, and I guess that's a left-leaning thing. But it raised a question in my mind that I think maybe we ought to address. And what they said was that it would cause people to be able to make tax-deductible contributions to political campaigns. In other words, it would go through the church. You make a donation to the church because you know that particular church is going to back this candidate or that candidate and talk him up and give him money, things like that. And I think that was a valid concern, so I'd like to have somebody address that.
Well, I'd like to say I think it's already going on. If you ever watched any of Jeremiah Wright's sermons and some of the other left-leaning, the Johnson Amendment didn't prohibit them one bit from promoting or demoting or being for or against a candidate in the pulpit, and very openly doing that.
Well, the Johnson Amendment also, I believe, affects universities as well, tax-exempt nonprofits.
Right.
So schools like UC Berkeley are nonprofit, tax-exempt, and we see them in the news. What are they doing? They're protesting. They're protesting Donald Trump. So there are universities taking advantage of the tax-exempt status, and they're as political as they can be. Mm-hmm. So I don't think if they're getting away with it and they're getting national news every day, I don't think churches have anything to worry about.
You're the lawyer, but I did look it up and did a little checking on it, and it does apply to all 501c3s, even like CCTA.
Yeah.
One of the things that I found out along the lines of what Hal said is the reason that they don't want the churches giving money to political candidates because that takes away the transparency. In other words, all donations to a political campaign are listed. Mm-hmm. OpenSecrets.org publicizes them. But I have another thought on that. Do you remember the campaign in California for Proposition 8?
Yes.
When they let out their list of donors, and some of those people were threatened, and some of their businesses were closed down, and horrible things happened to them. So if you're going to have transparency, you better have civility, because otherwise you get a really bad situation. But that was, again, my NPR research. That was one of their, they said overturning the law would also have major implications for campaign finance. If churches or clergy are allowed to participate in political campaigns, tax-free donations to the churches could go to support a political candidate. Religious organizations could become bigger money players in politics. So that was one of their fears.
There again, anytime you let the government get involved in anything, you're going to have that problem. I don't want my tax dollars going to pay for abortions, but
yeah,
they
know.
Do. Jared?
Just real quick, getting back to the original question, I think it's very important to note that while this issue is on the front burner right now, primarily because of President Trump's address during the National Day of Prayer, or the prayer breakfast, this has been championed by our congressman, Walter B. Jones, a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
It was
I'm not sure what you mean. What was championed? Getting rid of
the Johnson Amendment.
Okay.
He's the one that introduced legislation that was pretty much poo-pooed by his own party a long time ago. So while a lot of Republicans right now are saying this is a great idea, Walter Jones is the one that was it was groundbreaking when he introduced legislation to get rid of the Johnson Amendment quite a few years ago.
Right. A lot of them don't want to stick their neck out and get it chopped off. And now they've got somebody else above them that's doing that for them, so they can follow along and not have to worry about the repercussions.
I found it kind of interesting that this amendment was made back when Johnson was a senator, before he got to be president.
Mm-hmm.
But it was misinterpreted.
Yeah.
I mean, the purpose of it got misconstrued. It was not for the purpose of silencing the churches. It was targeted to manage some nonprofits, but it seems like it's had the biggest impact on the churches. And I know discussion was about the churches providing money. To me, you know, the bigger loss is they're not willing to even teach biblical principles in the church for fear that it might be viewed to be talking for or against a candidate. During the last election, I actually wrote something up. I talked to the elders. They let me stand in front of both of our services. And I was inspired on that by a book called Well Versed. And it was about talking about biblical principles.
Right.
Not political. That people want to say they're political. They're biblical. Abortion is a biblical principle.
But because they tie it to social issues now,
right,
it makes it political.
So I was allowed to share that. I shared it with four other people that were active in their church, and they spoke to their congregations about it. So our elders were bold enough to allow me to do that. I didn't speak politically. I spoke biblically.
Biblically.
That too.
Well, I think I can vouch for the fact that everybody in this room tonight that's speaking is conservative and is Christian. My problem is with the pastors that don't take time or put forth the effort to learn what they can or cannot do. They just assume, or they've been told, and they're afraid, like you said, to speak on biblical principles because it is tied to a social issue, and that makes it political. No, I disagree with that, Raina.
My problem is similar but different. My problem with ministers is I believe they should do what they think is right in that regard, regardless of what they believe the consequences might be. Well, and they're failing to do that as well. And to me, that
I'm going to disagree, because all of them, what they think is right ain't necessarily right. They should do what is biblically correct.
Mm-hmm. Rick, I'm a cynic. I guess everybody knows that by now.
So you're like you're seeing now? Is that?
No. maybe that too, but I'm a cynic. I always look for somebody's ulterior motive and so forth. I'm concerned that one of the reasons preachers don't make a stand on those kind of things is they're afraid they'll lose somebody from their congregation.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And they use this as an excuse.
Right.
And in fact, amen. When I heard Trump's comments about a repeal in the junk, first thing I did was I shot an email to those two elders, and I said, we get behind this, then the only thing we got to worry about is are we willing to chance offending our congregation?
Yep. Remove the excuse.
Nowadays, with so many churches being competitive for that dollar, mm-hmm. you know, they don't want to lose a single one.
Yep.
And if you look at the history of the churches in America, the churches used to have a strong moral voice. If you look at the sermons that came out of our churches before the American Revolution mm-hmm. about whether or not taxing without representation was right, they spoke about that.
Right.
If you look up the sermons before the Civil War, they spoke against slavery. They took a moral stand. I mean, it turned out it was political too, but it was a moral stand. We have moral issues today that are just not being addressed from the pulpit.
And the Johnson Amendment is partly responsible for that. If you do research on the Black Robe Regiment, they stood on street corners, and pretty much everything they preached about was political, would be considered political today.
And they're still doing it. They have the Black Robe Regiment. They have thousands of pastors now that on the Sunday that is, usually it's in October, and they designate a pastor, and they say, go ahead and send your entire sermon to the White House and see if you get in trouble.
Right.
And they will talk about candidates. They'll talk about anything. And they use that Sunday, and not one of them have been prosecuted or persecuted.
Good for them.
So they did it. And that's with the Alliance Defense Fund, if you know about that.
Yes.
Okay, Defending Freedom. But the IRS allows churches, and I did write this down, with the Johnson Amendment, and this is why sometimes you wonder, I started doing talks on the Johnson Amendment about 7 years ago because of the prompting of Walter Jones. And the excuse was we have this, this shackle that is keeping us from speaking out. But even with the Johnson Amendment, the IRS allows churches to host voter registration drives, host balloting, host forums where candidates address congregation to answer questions or a moderator. Dan Forrest, Judge Newby,
yeah.
Anytime that they're running, we invite them to our churches. I took Dan Forrest one time to four churches on one Sunday morning, and he spoke about the gospel. Now, he wasn't allowed to talk about, his candidacy, but he did talk about the gospel. And they're allowed to do that, even with the Johnson Amendment. You can distribute voter guides. So when people say, I can't do that, it's against the law, the IRS said you can. You can lobby. You can lobby 15% of your church operating time can be in lobbying. Pastors may teach on biblical, moral, and social issues. Pastors may personally endorse candidates, but not as a church. Pastors can run for office. Pastors can also work for political candidates. And they need to be upholding the biblical principles, Johnson Amendment or not. That's their job.
Right.
And we have a huge group in North Carolina who are doing just that. There's about 100 pastors who go to they go to Raleigh and they go to D.C. And they go in each room of the representatives and they pray for them, with them. And
Well, Glenn hit on probably the crux of the matter there is the pastors are afraid of offending people in their congregation.
Yeah.
As deacon chair in the church, I've served in, as chair of the deacon board, and I had a member come to me and tell me, we don't want politics in the church. I said, I agree. No, ma'am, we don't, but we do want the church in politics, and we're going to continue to do that.
And the rise and fall of significant kingdoms in the Old Testament is all about the political status and where they were in their faith.
Right.
And, you know, to pretend that they can't be married, this your faith and politics, is putting a blind eye. And it's how we got where we are now. The Johnson Amendment was 1954. It was the beginning, I believe, of the demise of our country, morally. Mm-hmm. 1963, the Bible's taken out. 1964, prayer was taken out of schools. And then you have 1974, abortion was legalized. I mean, you start looking at the pattern, nothing compared to before having pastors feeling as if they are being shackled from the pulpit.
I have some charts to back that up. David Barton, in a book he wrote, he published, had some charts in there that tracked from the time the Johnson Amendment went in and God was taken out of the schools. The illegitimate birth rate, crime statistics, all the things, and all the bad stuff skyrocketed, and all the good stuff took a nosedive.
Yeah,
don't tell me that's not related.
It is related.
Sure it is.
It definitely is related. And the other thing that happened along the same time is when they took the fathers out of black families.
Right.
You know, all of that was a well orchestrated attempt to take away the moral foundation that we had in this country.
That's right.
And
it started there, but now it's progressed to families of all colors are subject to that treatment because the government largesse to people who are not among the wealthy has grown and grown and grown and grown.
Right.
The war on poverty has failed.
We need to take a break here to hear from our sponsors, and we'll continue this conversation when we come back.
Would you like to improve your overall health without the use of prescription drugs? Is stress causing you health concerns? Do you want more energy? We hope that you would like to experience optimum health the rest of your life. We offer a free nutritional consultation to the listeners of this radio program. Call the office of Gladys Sussell, wellness educator and nutritional consultant, at 252-728-2118 to make an appointment to start your journey to optimum health.
On February 17th, the Craven County Republican Party will hold their annual Reagan Day Dinner at the New Bern Riverfront Convention Center. This year, the keynote speaker is none other than Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest. Tickets are $60 or $425 for a table of eight. You may purchase tickets online by going to cravengop.org and following the link, or contact Carl Mischka at 252-626-8199. Don't miss Dan Forrest, February 17th at the Reagan Day Dinner, sponsored by the Craven County Republican Party.
The County Compass is a rapidly growing, free, weekly newspaper throughout eastern North Carolina. At the County Compass, we believe small business is the future of our great nation. Many small business owners have discovered that an ad in the County Compass each week is the most effective, the most affordable way to reach thousands of readers from all walks of life. At the County Compass, we focus entirely on local and regional news, coverage of important issues that directly affect your life. At the County Compass, we love our readers, and we love our advertisers. This Thursday and every Thursday at more than 750 distribution points throughout eastern North Carolina, pick up your free copy of the County Compass newspaper.
As a strong advocate of Second Amendment rights, CCTA is proud to be involved with S&D Gun and Knife Shows. The next S&D Gun and Knife Show will be at the American Legion Building in Jacksonville on Saturday and Sunday, March 4th and 5th. Buy, sell, and trade with Eastern North Carolina's best dealers and enjoy the most competitive prices in the state. Most gun enthusiasts and collectors agree. S&D Gun and Knife Shows are the place to be. The next show is March 4th and 5th at the American Legion Building in Jacksonville.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
Welcome back to CCTA Wake Up Call, continuing our discussion with our panel consisting of Diane Rufino, Karen Kozell, Jerry Scheel, and regular members of CCTA, Hal and Rainer James, and Mary and Bob Griswold, Glenn Fink, and I am your host, Rick Hopkins. We've been talking about the Johnson Amendment and the possibility of the repeal of that. Jerry and Karen, you deal a lot with pastors. What do you think we as congregants and as citizens can do to educate our pastors on this, to get them involved in the process so they understand it more?
I think just having them read and give them information. My pastor is very on top of political situation and is very open from the pulpit. So, you know, we are very fortunate in our church.
Okay, so someone in a church whose pastor is not on top of it,
then I would
where would you suggest they go to get information to?
I would go to the Alliance Defending Freedom, and it's online.
Okay.
And there are Q&As every day about this issue, especially right now with Trump and his willingness to repeal.
Right.
And you remember that we had 80 million believers, evangelicals, not vote. 40 million of those were not even registered in our 12 election.
Right. And if you look at the stats for the past elections, that has been a problem, and that's part of why we're where we're at today.
That's right. But these evangelicals came out for Trump.
They did.
And I think this is a wonderful option that he's allowing us is to actually repeal this and, you know, get our feet back on the foundation of God and the Bible, which is where we need to be.
Absolutely. And that's the message I wanted to get out to people. If you have a pastor that you think needs some help, then please give it to them, because we need to make sure this happens. We won't get this opportunity again if we pass
that's
it
right.
up.
Along the same lines, I see my pastor several times a week, and I have yet to query him as to what he thinks about this. So
it won't be long.
No, it won't be. But we can't just, instead of preaching and saying, this is what you folks need to do, what we're talking about is what we need to do. And it starts with us. And I've been lax in that. As an organization, the God and Country Christian Alliance, with a meeting coming up later this month, this will be an issue that we need to talk about. Our vice chairman is a pastor of a church in Havelock, and we'll try to get as many pastors there as we can. But we've already touched on it. Some pastors might fear that they will get rid of the Johnson Amendment, because then they have no excuse.
Right.
So, and I do think the Johnson Amendment, as Glenn said earlier, is used is an excuse from some pastors.
Maybe we should get a number of the pastors that are informed and are behind it to come out and speak. And then these other pastors will be more afraid of losing their congregants to those churches than they are to the RS.
Oh, our church has doubled in size, I can tell you.
So, Karen, you were mentioning the Free Speech Fairness Act, because some people are afraid that, you know, this might open up a can of worms. It has bad consequences. So.
Right, right. Well, the concern would be that if you repeal the Johnson Amendment, that someone more of a liberal leaning would come in with something even more fierce. And so that was the fear before, during the Obama, you know, years, and that would happen and that we would be even in worse shape. But Representative Jody Heiss from Georgia has come up with what he calls the Free Speech Fairness Act, and it is being received very well. And basically what it would do, it would be, it's, let's not call it the repeal and replace, but it would be a little bit of that, in, if you can imagine that as part of it. And I am going to take my notes and tell you some of the points that it has. One is that you'll be allowed to speak freely on all matters of life, including candidates and elections. This includes all 501c3. It would also, the bill applies to all 501c3 entities, not just churches, and the IRS will finally be taken out of policing speech, which is really not part of their job. The bill does not turn churches and charities into political action committees. They need to keep money out of it. That money should not be a part of this. It is not a collection for candidates. It's not a collection for issues. But they can talk about it. Now, if someone wants to make an individual, you know, donation to a candidate, they are, of course, allowed to. But they're not going to collect it through the conduit of right. 501c3.
That answers that question.
Yeah, well, and the bill does not allow for contributions or parties. So neither. The bill is constitutionally sound. This freedom, we're talking about the Free Speech Fairness Act. It is constitutionally sound. It removes a very unconstitutional restriction on speech that has existed for over 60 years. Senator Lankford and Representative Heiss have introduced a constitutional bill that exempts organization and once again removes IRS from business.
Okay, Hal, you brought up a good point that this amendment is not an amendment to the Constitution. It's an amendment to the tax code.
Well, I thought we ought to say that because a lot of times when we speak the amendments in a general term, we're talking about amendments to the Constitution.
Right.
But this is an amendment to the IRS code, just the tax code.
Right. All right. Well, let's move on to our next subject. And Mary, you had some information on immigration issues.
Well, we've heard a lot of hoopla this week about President Trump, who has said we're going to limit the immigration from certain countries right now till we can do extreme vetting on them and make sure that we're not letting people in that don't have our best interests at heart. And ISIS has already stated that they're mixing terrorists in with the refugees. And last week I came across something where Trump had been negotiating with Saudi Arabia and I think somebody else, it might have been the UAE, I'm not sure, about setting up a safe zone in the Middle East. Now that makes much more sense because that puts them in a puts the refugees in a culture that they're familiar with rather than throwing them into a culture that is totally unfamiliar. And we could talk about motives, but I'm going to avoid that. And it just makes more sense. Even if we wind up protecting the safe zone with our military, it's still going to be cheaper than bringing them here and trying to house them and feed them and educate
and
them.
And safer.
Yeah. But the problem there is they won't be able to vote in U.S. elections.
Uh-oh.
No. But I went back.
I'm a cynic.
Calling a spade a spade.
And 8 U.S. Code 1182 and Section F. Because I went back and looked up the law. And it's, I'm not a lawyer. I'm not in danger of becoming a lawyer. But it's pretty blunt. It says, whenever the president finds that the entry of any aliens or any class of aliens into the United States would be detrimental to the interests of the United States, he may, by proclamation and for such period as he shall deem necessary, suspend the entry of all aliens or any class of aliens as such period as he shall, and wait a minute, as he's, you know.
Or she.
Okay.
Woohoo!
But he has that right to restrict the entry.
And it doesn't take an attorney to understand what's written there.
And that has been done throughout history and numerous times.
Well, the law was passed in 1952, and under further investigation, immigration had been shut down between 1924 and 1965. So there weren't even any immigrants coming in, and they passed this law. And the other thing that I found out, when the Iranian revolution happened, 1979, Jimmy Carter announced that all Iranian students had to report to immigration. They had to confirm that they were here legally, and those who weren't were sent back. And he put a moratorium on Iranians being allowed in the country, again, to protect the country. Now, that makes sense. And nobody protested. Nobody had a fit. So what is going on?
Part of our country's lost their ever-loving minds. Well, that's what's going on.
They've lost their mind. They have not fed their mind with the proper information. Let's clear up a couple of things, first of all. This has happened a number of times throughout the history of the United States. And I don't think there's any snowflakes listening to us, but just in case they are, I'll try to clarify. We're not against immigration.
No.
But along with that, we want assimilation.
Absolutely.
We want this to be their country because they want it to be their country, not turn it into another country or bring their culture here and change our culture, which is what's going on.
They want to embrace the culture that's here.
I'm tired of hearing that we are a country of immigrants because, yes, we are. But they had to come in through Ellis Island. They had to be screened for disease and criminal records and everything else. They didn't just walk through an open border into our country and start immediately drawing welfare and medical benefits and everything else. There was a process that they had to go through. And we're not against that.
And the goal wasn't welfare benefits. It was opportunity.
Opportunity, right. So another thing I want to clarify is Donald Trump didn't make a new law here. A lot of people are under the impression, it's not a new law. It's a law that's been there. He was just saying, let's enforce it. All the seven countries that were identified under the Obama administration by our national security people as threats. So he hasn't done anything but say, let's enforce the existing law that's on the books.
I just want to mention something. I had a friend a few years ago who was here legally studying to be an American citizen. And he showed me his textbook and his sample questions. And I was thoroughly impressed. They were questions I don't think an American high school kid could answer. I mean, when you study to be an American citizen.
Or a senator or congressman.
Well, that too. when you want to be an American citizen and you want to do it legally, you have to have an understanding of the three branches of government, the checks and balances, and the whole thing. And we have forgotten to teach that to our kids.
That's right.
And it wasn't an oversight, Mary. It was done with malice aforethought.
Tomorrow, they say the Ninth Circuit is going to issue their ruling.
Their opinion.
Their opinion. That's right. We use the word opinion.
Right. Because let's not forget, that's all that judges can do is issue an opinion. They do not make laws. They are there to enforce and interpret.
But the Ninth Circuit is the most liberal circuit court in the
country. And the most often overturned, I believe.
And you also have to remember that the majority of them are not elected. They're appointed.
They're appointed for life.
It's interesting. We ourselves are in a conflict right now. Understanding the way the Ninth Circuit will interpret this, they're going to interpret the way that they think the president is thinking. Whereas in our earlier discussion on the Johnson Amendment, much of our thinking is based on the way that we thought Johnson was thinking. Not based on the basic rule. I mean, the basic rule, whether it's good or bad, it needs to be enforced equally. In this case, understanding that basic rule. In this case, we need to understand the basic rule needs to be enforced, not thinking about a way a person is thinking.
Well, you know, we all just heard Mary read that law, I guess, and I don't see how anybody can interpret it any other way.
The Ninth Circuit has the power.
Yeah, right.
All you had to do is listen to a little bit of their questioning, and I didn't catch much of it, but it's clear where they stand.
They have been, well, a lot of the rulings they come up with have affected us all the way over here on the East Coast also, you know, because other courts look to them as setting a precedent.
The Fourth Circuit Court is pretty liberal too, I think.
Right. Remember? The voters of North Carolina, the people here, voted for voter ID.
Mm-hmm.
That was the will of the people.
Right.
One liberal appointed judge took that back. Diane?
just before the case in Washington decided that this was unconstitutional and put the TRO, temporary restraining order, a court in Massachusetts found it perfectly constitutional. So there's varying opinions all over the country.
Yeah, well, there's more than one constitution, obviously, because I've been trying to get a hold of the copy that they use on the West Coast.
Well, I'm sure praying that Gorsuch gets to be on the Supreme Court, because I think a lot of this foolishness will die pretty fast.
Well, I understand from comments that some of them were making today, he's going to be there one way or the other. So
okay.
And the other part of that, too, is because of Harry Reid's actions regarding the nuclear option, the lower court judges will go through very well. And it's quite possible we can undo some of the court packing that President Obama did and put in some people who actually have read the Constitution and want to follow it.
Well, that's one thing I've been trying to figure out is how we can get rid of some of these judges that the courts have been packed
they
with.
They serve during good behavior.
Good behavior,
they are exhibiting
it.
Some pretty nasty behaviors.
Right, and
malicious.
I think if somebody would lead an effort to bring charges against some of them on the basis of that.
Let's hold and impeach them.
Well, it's not really impeaching at that point.
It can be. Diane, you're our lawyer. Yeah. Doesn't the Constitution say that we can impeach judges?
Oh, yeah. You know, there's only one judge, Justice of the Supreme Court, that was ever impeached, and that was by Jefferson. It was a member of the Supreme Court that just before his term was under the Alien and Sedition Act. He had a personal hatred for anti-federalists. And went after them with special zeal and had them imprisoned. And Jefferson thought that, first of all, this Alien Sedition Act are unconstitutional, but to go at them and lock them up with such zeal, it was just heinous. So as soon as he was elected president, he brought him up on impeachment charges. But he was not removed. He didn't pass in the Senate. But I wanted to bring up something. I have a suggestion for some of these liberal, progressive judges on the federal courts. Since they are so fond of making law from the bench, what they're not supposed to, why don't we offer them, maybe they can hang up their robes and run for office. This way they can make law and free up some spaces and we can get some new judges.
That's a good idea. We probably need to encourage that.
There was an example made on that I've heard that one did.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
I heard that in the news last night.
Well, Rainer, tell us what the Legislative Action Committee's been up to in Raleigh.
Well, we went last week. There were 9 of us. And we had a goal of seeing 16 members of the General Assembly, getting around to all of Eastern North Carolina representatives. We didn't quite make that, but we did visit 12 offices and had 3 meetings in the hall.
That's 15. That's close.
Yeah, we did pretty well. And add to that we had to scurry back here to record that night, so
right.
We were really moving. We took a little cover letter and talking about the state pension plan. The state employees pension plan is a defined benefit plan, which is a very expensive form of doing business. Most private companies have gone to defined contribution. And we're really fortunate that Dale Falwell, the North Carolina Treasurer, is making the General Assembly aware of shortfalls in funding for the pension plans and for the health plans. It looks like it's to the tune of about $38 billion overall. Mm-hmm. He feels that about $14 billion needs to be caught up over the next 8 to 9 years. When you take into account that the total annual state budget is about $122 billion, you realize that we're talking a real chunk of change.
We are, yes.
So we talked about switching kinds of plans and doing it with a grandfather clause so that people at or near retirement wouldn't be hurt by it. And also allowing people to make their own choices within the plan. Part of the problem is fund managers have not gotten the returns they've been projected, not even close. And if people control their own, they might be more alert and have the opportunity to do better.
Well, isn't that a moot point? Because based on the reports I've been hearing, if HB2 is not repealed, we're going to go bankrupt anyway.
I don't believe those reports, and I know you don't.
It was interesting today as we were listening to the radio. Governor Cooper took credit for 180 people coming in on I guess a paper company.
New jobs in North Carolina.
I guess they aren't affected by HB2.
So. I guess not. Well, Rainer, overall your visit, how was it received?
It was very well received. There were four people, Norm Sanderson, Senator Sanderson, Michael Speciale, Representative Speciale, Senator Bill Cook, and John Bell, the
majority
leader of the House. I did a blank. Took a lot of time with us, so we had a lot of give and take. One of the things that John Bell showed some reticence about was House Bill 2. And in most of the short meetings, I gave a kind of elevator speech version and went through a number of things quickly. That one started that way when he showed some seeing both sides of it, how the athletic things are affecting Charlotte and so on. Every single person who was with us spoke on that issue from their hearts, and it obviously affected his thinking. Now, how long that will last and whether he stays with us or not, I don't know. But I do know that every person who went did an excellent job that day, and particularly in that John's conference room.
I'm sure they did. Y'all do some very important work. The trips you make to Raleigh have had a big impact. We got to take another break here to hear from our sponsors, and we'll come back and talk some more about this.
For news, commentary, and a different perspective, check out rightwinggranny.com. Hey, Granny's got it going on. See for yourself. Go to rightwinggranny.com.
Y'all ready for this? The County Compass is a rapidly growing, free, weekly newspaper throughout eastern North Carolina. At the County Compass, we believe small business is the future of our great nation. Many small business owners have discovered that an ad in the County Compass each week is the most effective, the most affordable way to reach thousands of readers from all walks of life. At the County Compass, we focus entirely on local and regional news, coverage of important issues that directly affect your life. At the County Compass, we love our readers and we love our advertisers. This Thursday and every Thursday at more than 750 distribution points throughout eastern North Carolina, pick up your free copy of the County Compass newspaper.
On February 17th, the Craven County Republican Party will hold their annual Reagan Day Dinner at the New Bern Riverfront Convention Center. This year, the keynote speaker is none other than Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest. Tickets are $60 or $425 for a table of eight. You may purchase tickets online by going to cravengop.org and following the link, or contact Carl Mischka at 252-626-8199. Don't miss Dan Forrest, February 17th at the Reagan Day Dinner, sponsored by the Craven County Republican Party.
Would you like to improve your overall health without the use of prescription drugs? Is stress causing you health concerns? Do you want more energy? We hope that you would like to experience optimum health the rest of your life. We offer a free nutritional consultation to the listeners of this radio program. Call the office of Gladys Sussell, wellness educator and nutritional consultant, at 252-728-2118 to make an appointment to start your journey to optimum health.
Welcome back to CCTA Wake Up Call as we continue our discussion on our local legislative actions with Rainer James, chairman of our Legislative Action Committee. Y'all went to the commissioners meeting. Well, actually, this is part of your stuff too, Hal, Watchdog Group.
Well, we were a combined effort as usual.
All right. Well, tell us what happened at that meeting.
Well, 17 CCTA members showed up on a very short notice, and I was really grateful for that.
So attendance was up by 1,000%.
Three of us, Randy Seiler, Hal, and I, spoke. And at the end of the, well, first of all, what we were talking about, we would like for the commissioners to do a resolution asking the General Assembly to have the Craven County Board of Elections elected by district. Right now, people are confused
Board of Education.
I'm sorry, yes, Board of Education. They are elected during the primary within the district only. In the general election, everybody countywide votes for a Board of Education member in any district.
You reckon that has anything to do with why the chairman of the Board of Education, the past chairman, was there for 24 years?
It has a lot to do with it. It also confuses the heck out of voters. And I'd love to see it be partisan races because political parties back the candidates for school board.
Right. Well, let me clarify real quick because we're covering more counties now. This is Craven County School Board.
Yes,
Craven
County. Asking for a local action by the General Assembly.
All counties aren't the same.
Okay, so, and it closely parallels the petition that we're asking voters, registered voters, to sign in Craven County. The commissioners heard what we had to say politely. They went on with their meeting. At the end of the meeting, during the commissioner reports, they did something that they seldom do, and I really appreciated it. And that is, four of them said how they felt and what they believed about what we had asked them to do. Commissioner Jason Jones, George Liner, Scott Dacey, and Tom Mark all indicated that they support the notion of school board members elected within the district only. So that, I was delighted to hear that. Scott Dacey pointed out that running a district race is a whale of a lot less expensive than running a countywide race and opined that probably more good candidates would run for school board in that scenario, which I hadn't even thought of. None of us had discussed that, and I thought it was a great point. None of the commissioners wanted partisan races, however.
That's interesting why they don't want anybody to know what party they're affiliated with.
As I said, I know in Craven County, in the school board races this time around, the Republican Party gave money and support with handouts. I know that the Democrat Party gave support with handouts. I don't know whether they gave money or not. But when a party supports a candidate, they expect that candidate, if elected, to do their job in such a way that it reflects the worldview of the platform and the way that that party generally thinks. So as a voter, I think that gives me a really big clue about who I'm voting for, and I think other voters would benefit from that as well. However...
Well, let me just state one thing there.
Okay.
I don't see the big point in them not wanting it to be a partisan race, because anybody that's really interested can go to the voter registration online and find out what party
they're in. Absolutely, but too many of us are too lazy.
I know. I just want to let everybody know that information's freely available. If you have a question on what party affiliation the candidate's got, you can find it.
I want to add something real quickly. The only time I've ever seen the board of commissioners, and I go to most of their meetings, actually address an issue that's been addressed by the petitioners is when the room is packed.
That's
right. And there were so many people in there, they had to open up that side room and put a lot of people in there to watch it on television instead of actually being in the chambers.
Right.
So if we hadn't had that big turnout, we probably wouldn't have gotten the answer from
them. Well, I wanted to point that out, that this is a perfect example of what grassroots activists can accomplish.
Absolutely.
When you show up, you get their attention. Go ahead, Rainer.
Commissioner Theron McCabe was nodding in agreement when they were talking about wanting it in district only. He didn't speak on that, but it was quite clear what his opinion was from his body language. They indicated that they would be willing, as individuals, to back this. They didn't want to do the resolution because they felt reticent about their board trying to influence how another board is constituted. But they didn't show any hesitancy about doing it as individuals. So after the meeting, I went up, shook hands, thanked them, and asked them if they would get in touch with their representatives in the General Assembly and let them know. They agreed that they would, and George Liner said that he had already called Senator Sanderson and asked for an appointment to discuss it. So I felt pretty darn good. Yeah,
sounds like another successful effort.
It won't. I don't think we'll get 100%. But just think about it. I hope we get it the partisan races right. too, because that would nail it. But if we could get it within the district, that would provide a big chunk of clarity for voters.
Right.
And so I'm very, very hopeful.
Well, we're running out of time, so let's move on. Job well done there. Thank you for that report. There's some information came in today that there's a concerted effort, again, to call for a constitutional convention here in North Carolina, and they're lobbying the legislature for that. Anybody have any input on that?
Well, I talked to Mark Jones, and he lives over in Surrey County. He used to live here and be one of us. And he said that there's a group of paid people who are going around, conservative groups, GOP groups. He heard it at the GOP, Surrey County.
GOP groups aren't doing it. Paid people are going to.
They're having people come to them, want to speak, selling the idea of a constitutional convention, calling a constitutional convention. He says that North Carolina is targeted for that. And when they talk about it, it sounds like the best thing since sliced right. bread, that it will be limited to things like balanced budget and term limits. And that some very conservative people have bought off on it because it sounds really good.
Right. On the surface, it does because yeah. they're selling it. And anytime
exactly.
you're trying to sell something, you don't point
exactly.
out the bad parts.
He said that RAL had a report out today that the General Assembly is under pressure to go forward on it. And he pointed out something to me that we all know that is very interesting. The Constitution only talks about if enough states ask, a convention will be called for
right.
the purpose of amending the Constitution. If enough states pass them, then the Constitution will be amended. But the delegates to a constitutional convention are not, there's no way to limit them. George Soros and some people on the left are looking to get rid of the Second Amendment, get rid of the Electoral College. There is just beneath the surface an equally hard push to make changes that we would hate. So it's very, very dangerous.
Diane?
The timing of this concerns me. We have a president who's vowed to limit government and kind of bring it back within some kind of sensible constitutional limits. Everything he's doing is streamlining. He's getting rid of things that we don't need. The reason we talked about a constitutional convention in the past is to limit government, right? Government's out of control. Let's bring it back within some kind of limit. So we have a president now committed to that, showing that he is doing that every single day. Why all of a sudden do we need to address this now? Why don't we wait 4 or 8 years to see what Donald Trump could do?
Good point.
I think there's an insidious nature to this. I don't trust it. Maybe it is the Second Amendment. Maybe it is the Electoral College. That's how they lost this election, right?
So. Right.
You think maybe that the left is so worried about Trump that they've taken this sort of tack to try to get things the way they want them?
Well, remember, a constitutional convention.
They've been pushing this for quite a
yeah,
while.
Yeah.
It didn't just rear its ugly
right.
head, but it's a concerted effort now. And they're targeting certain
states.
North
right.
Carolina is one being targeted.
I think we need to really let our members of the General Assembly know
right.
absolutely
our concerns about this.
Like I said, they're trying to sell this. They're selling mm-hmm. it on the good points, which there are some good points, but there are some caveats that you need to be aware of. What we also need to do is sell them on the alternatives, which are what?
Nullification, interposition.
Can you explain that for our listeners?
Well, it's the notion that a federal law that is not passed pursuant to the Constitution is null and void on its face and of no effect whatsoever. So the state government would say, interpose itself between the people of North Carolina and a law that is null because it's not made pursuant to the Constitution, and say not in North Carolina.
Diane, do you agree?
Absolutely. Beautifully stated. Perfectly stated. I'm sitting here smiling ear to ear. Music to my ear.
Oh, my gosh. We've run out of time here. We're going to have to cut this off. You know, we get into these conversations, and next thing you know, we're totally out of time. Karen, thank you for joining us. Diane, I appreciate you being here. And Jerry, I'm glad you were able to come and be with us tonight. Look forward to having you with us again at some later time. Well, that's all the time we have for CCTA Wake Up Call today. Please visit cctaxpayers.com and find out more about our organization.